This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Shahad Kutin with me, Kuzu Chuang and Tan Chung Han. With the top business stories of the day, we take a look at the tourism tax, which is causing a row on so many different levels, political tensions between partners in the Federation. But maybe we could focus on the kind of economic and business and policy side of this. I mean, why is it that we're having a tourism tax and how best to utilize those revenues?
Well, it's obviously it's another measure by the government to try and get additional sources of revenue because it's been running a deficit since 1998, spending more on itself and its operating expenditure than it has been collecting from tax sources, whether corporation tax or individual taxes. So therefore, in the last couple of years, we've seen a whole series of new taxes, including GST, including more aggressive measures by the Inland Revenue to capture itinerant corporations and individuals, even aggressive measures on excise duties on tobacco and alcohol.
But, you know, deficit budgeting is not exactly bad. I mean, it is, in fact, quite a normal thing, right? The question of really is the ratio, isn't it, of the deficit to your future earnings?
Well, I think going back to the Malaysian context, you know, the fact that the government has set this mandate whereby we want, or they want to see a balanced budget. Well, initially by 2020, although that target has just come off the rails a little bit due to what we're seeing with oil prices, but because we have set the agenda in place and because global investors are hanging, and even the sovereign credit rating agencies, they are hanging their hat on that pledge, you know, so we have to basically fulfill that pledge, you know. Now, it is not something that's unique to Malaysia, you know, even Australia as well. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, he has also set out the agenda of trying to return Australia back to a budget surplus. And so there is this push by various governments around the world, you know, trying to make sure that we've got budget parity. But going back to this tourism tax here, I think it's important to set the context here because, you know, we have plenty of noise going about this proposed measure here. But when you look at, say, the quantum of it, right, it's a 2 ringgit and 50 cent extra per night for non-rated hotels. And like, say, for a 2-star hotel, you know, you could see an increase of about 5 ringgit. And if you go all the way up to a 5-star hotel, it goes up to 20 ringgit extra per night. You know, so, you know, I wonder if the noise is proportionate to, say, the quantum of this tourism tax that's being bandied about, again, set to go into effect on July 1st.
Absolutely, because if you look at it from the hospitality sector point of view, you're already paying quite high corporation tax on a regional basis. You've also had consumers on the individual side paying GST, which is a new phenomenon in the last couple of years. You've also seen things like quite stagnant wage growth, as well as inflationary concerns with rising cost of living. So these are all going to militate against the development of the tourism and hospitality industries. And that, as much as been said by the Deloitte Malaysia Indirect Tax Partner Centre and Ella Lingam, quoted in the Edge Financial Daily. We've also spoken to the Swiss Hotel CEO Ricky Young recently on The Grill, and he's also got this to say.
Let me try to answer that with an analogy of, say, you and I walking into a shopping mall and we decide to buy a pair of shoes. So we go to the counter, we pay. We pay for the listed price, we pay for the GST. And then we also have to pay for what we call, what would probably be called a shopping mall tax. Now, if that sits well with you, then I guess there's nothing wrong with the tourism tax. But I don't think, to be perfectly honest, it is pretty palatable to general consumers. If I'm a tourist, I'm coming into your country, I'm spending money in your country, you know, I'm already paying hotel bills, I'm obviously going to pay food bills, and I'm going to pay shopping bills and things like that. Why do you have to charge me a tax for using hotels over and above this? And then again, if you're going to charge me this type of taxes, how are we going to charge those unregulated accommodation services like Airbnb? Again, it comes back to the equation of, you know, being so heavily regulated on one hand and not having regulation totally on the other hand.
So if you look at the Tourism Malaysia website, the last few years, Malaysia's tourist arrivals have been quite static at about the 25, 26 million number level. Of course, with the influx of China tourists and the visa-free status that they now enjoy, maybe those numbers will spike. But be that as it may, there's another cost of coming to the business. The thing is, when you look at the hotel occupancy rates, according to Deloitte Malaysia, we've been, you know, they've been as a general blended basis, they've been getting about 35 to 40% occupancy the last couple of years. Those are not great numbers. And when you add another layer of costs, it's not going to be a pretty sight.
Can I just ask a point of clarification? When we talk about the tourist tax, are we talking exclusively about non-citizens who come for tourism purposes? Or are we also looking at domestic tourists, meaning Malaysians too will have to pay for this tax?
No, from what we understand, it's basically anybody who checks in into any of these hotels. So again, could it be non-rated hotels up to the five-star hotels?
So it's like a hotel tax.
Yeah, really? Yeah, basically a hotel tax, because there have been calls by the hotel industry here in Malaysia to essentially try and push it off to, you're right, Sharad, as in trying to impose that tax at the airport so you only target foreign tourist arrivals or when they exit the country. So there's that push. But nevertheless, the Malaysian Parliament has said that July 1st, it's going to be a hotel tax. But then, real quick here, because when you look at, say, the outlook for the number of tourist arrivals here in Malaysia, it's set to go up to 31 million tourists this year compared to last year.
That's a target. We've been trying to get to 30 million for the last couple of years.
Well,
that target's been scuppered the last couple of years by things like the haze, things like the yellow shirt thing.
MH370. Sure.
And, memories are quite short, but be that as it may, the China tourists, they don't forget that a lot of their own people were basically caught in MH370.
But nevertheless, that will mark a significant rebound from the numbers that we saw last year, below 27 million, up to 31. Now, granted, this is a target. There could be execution risk. But then, by the same token, you can argue that, say, the weaker ringgit now compared to last year, that could be a boon for foreign tourist arrivals as well, right? So again, I wonder, how much of the 2 ringgit... I mean, essentially, it's this. If you have to spend 2 ringgit 50 cent more a night or up to 20 ringgit more a night, will that really deter that many tourists, be it local or foreign, from actually spending the night at the hotel? I think that's a question that all the stakeholders have to answer, really.
Okay, it's a 64 million ringgit question. Also in the news, Securities Commission Malaysia and Bursa Malaysia are on high alert as investigations over claims of improprieties at FGV escalate.
Yeah, so the intention from the Prime Minister's office is for this whole matter with FGV to be wrapped up before Raya occurs. And of course, the thing is, this is quite an aggressive target because Fellow Global Ventures has been the subject of much scrutiny over its mergers and acquisitions, the way it's handled its financials the last few years. And of course, we've seen 2/3 of the market cap erased from shareholder coffers. So the issue now is the response to Dato' Sri Idris Jalla's involvement as a fact-finding investigator in the whole Fellow Global Ventures scenario. And the minority shareholders watchdog group, the general manager there, lady called Alia Rahman, she's got quite interesting views, because this, I think, will reflect the views of the shareholders, because at the end of the day, the issues at Felder Global have been quite political in nature, and we don't need another political in the fray to unearth more political solutions. And this is much was said by the H Financial Weekly as well in its op-ed column on the Frankly Speaking section. And just to quote Leah Rahman, she said to the Malaysian Reserve, she said that although the appointment of an external party is not common, the investigation would be much more credible if it were conducted by independent professionals who are not in any way linked to the government. And unfortunately, Dato' Sri Idris Jalla, who has come from Shell, is still a minister in the Prime Minister's department and therefore is a politician.
He was. He's stepped down, right? So his term as senator has ended. Also in the news, we have amassing.
Yeah, so they've been in the news, and I think, obviously they've been going on record, that Tan Sri Leong Hwai Kam, the managing director, saying that even though they've got 9 years' worth of land bank within the fold, they have still got lots of ammunition to grow the land bank, because as of 31st of March, they have something like 838 million ringgit of cash on their balance sheet, which with a net gearing of just 0.02 times. So you'd have to imagine, as a business person, where right now the property sector is going through a bit of a doldrum period, and asset owners and land bank owners are trying to, I guess, cash up and trying to get rid of, asset prices are quite deflated now. And if you had cash in your balance sheet and you have ammo in your war chest, you would deploy it.
Yeah, and when you look at Masing specifically, they had just recently raised about 650 million ringgit in perpetual bonds. So those kind of funds, certainly will go a long ways in terms of them or Masing trying to acquire or basically pad up more of their land bank. And I recall I spoke recently to RHB analyst Lung Kok Wen, and you can check out the podcast on our website there. Essentially, that at least in her view, she expects Masing to basically go about about trying to acquire more, you know, land over the basically over 2017, because I mean they just recently bought that new place in Titiwangsa. Although there's been a bit of a glitch on that front, they've also tried to make forays into Sentul as well. So we have already seen plenty of activity on the land banking front by Ma Sing, and I think, you know, well, at least according to Lung Kok Wen, perhaps more to come in the future.
Well, the key theme for Ma Sing is obviously the affordable home segment, and the land they bought in Titiwangsa, just 3.6 acres, they're going to be doing non-landed residential properties priced below $500,000 per unit. So that seems to be quite palatable for the middle-income earners.
But do you know what the hiccup is with their Titiwangsa land? So apparently there are two different people with the same details, and they're trying to basically suss out who the rightful owner is with the Titiwangsa land. Go figure. How is that for some insight there, huh?
Very interesting. We're coming up to the news, and after that, of course, we'll have the opening numbers on the stock market and more analysis on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.